Good morning to each one. Wish God's blessing to each one that is gathered out here this morning. Appreciated the service this far and what was shared. Feel like it goes quite well with the message that I feel it was laying on my heart for this morning. It's kind of difficult to be thinking of trying to, at least for me, it's difficult to be trying to think of two messages at once. I knew I was going to have to preach for on Friday night, the council meeting, and I was also trying to get a message together for this morning. And I was kind of struggling to know which I should preach at where, because I was thinking on two different messages. And the more I thought about the one that I chose this morning, you can turn to Psalms 101. Psalms 101, I have a text verse here. Thinking of last weekend and what all we heard last weekend, and now to pick up and to build on that and to continue on in life with the encouragement and the exhortation we received last weekend. How do we go about facing some of the battles in life that we have? What do we do? How do we fight them? My text verse this morning is verse 3. I will set no wicked thing before mine eyes. I'm sure many of you realize that often in Anabaptist circles, this verse is used in teaching against allowing television and videos and DVDs and all that kind of stuff. Many times, church leaders go to this verse and say, this is what God's talking about here. And I believe to a certain degree he is. That is partly why we do not have the television in our homes, because of the evil that is on there. But when I read this verse, I decided that I ought to read what all else David was talking about when he wrote this verse. And I'd like to take the time now to read this psalm. It's a short one. And I also want to look at another psalm this morning. The title I have for my message this morning is, What Are You Looking At? Let's read Psalms 101. I will sing of the mercy and judgment unto thee, O Lord, will I sing. I will behave myself wisely in a perfect way. O when wilt thou come unto me? I will walk within my house with a perfect heart. I will set no wicked thing before mine eyes. I hate the work of them that turn aside. It shall not cleave to me. A froward heart shall depart from me. I will not know a wicked person. Whoso privately slandereth his neighbor, him I will cut off. Him that hath a high look and a proud heart will not I suffer. Mine eyes shall be upon the faithful of the land, that they may dwell with me. He that walketh in a perfect way, he shall serve me. He that worketh deceit shall not dwell in my house, and he that telleth lies shall not tarry in my sight. I will early destroy all the wicked of the land, that I may cut off all wicked doers from the city of the Lord. As we think about what David is writing here, I want to go back to this thought of the television. Is that all David had in mind? Now, we know that David didn't even have the technology to have such a device in his house. But I see that David had more. Here in verse 1, this is where we all need to start out at in life. God is a merciful, and he's also a judge. And we need to worship and praise God on that basis. God is our maker, and we have come together this morning to worship him because of his mercy. If God was not a God of mercy, we wouldn't even be sitting here this morning. And yet God is not just all mercy. He is a God of justice as well. And he does not tolerate sin in our lives. but he is merciful as well. David realizes here in verse 2 that he must order his steps wisely. Because God is a God of justice, David needs to walk perfectly before God. And he realizes that he cannot take this walk on his own. He needs God's Spirit. Oh, when wilt thou come unto me? David needed God's Spirit to direct his life and to order his steps. And then in the rest of the verses, except for verse 6, he needed God's Spirit to help him to walk in an orderly manner and to choose what he allowed in his life. In verse 3, I will set no wicked thing before mine eyes. David needed God's Spirit. David needed God's Spirit to find his friends, to find the people in the land that were not serving God. And I like verse 6 because it brings out the importance of friends. Mine eyes shall be upon the faithful of the land. David realized that as he lived his life, not only did he need God, but he needed faithful friends as well. But what I want us to really look at this morning is David's language that he used. David was making commitments in almost every phrase in this chapter. I will sing. I'm going to choose God. There's not going to be an option this morning of what I'm going to do with God. I am committed to serving and singing. I will behave myself wisely. It's not just a half-hearted, well, I'm going to try and walk the right way. I will do this. I will walk within my house with a perfect heart. I will set no wicked thing before my eyes. This is not just a wander through life expecting things to turn out in a good way, but waking up each morning and David was choosing what was right and what was wrong. He was studying God. He was asking God to come into his heart and give him the wisdom to make these solid choices. I want to turn to Psalm chapter 1. And I want to read that one. It's another very short psalm. Many of us maybe know it by memory. And some of us, or perhaps all of us, know it because of a song that was pulled out of this chapter as well. But I only want to read this one because of the same wording that David uses here. Verse 1, blessed is a man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor standeth in the way of sinners, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful. But his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law doth he meditate day and night. And he shall be like a tree planted by the rivers of water that bringeth forth his fruit in his season. His leaf also shall not wither, and whatsoever he doeth shall prosper. The ungodly are not so, but are like the chaff with which the wind driveth away. Therefore the ungodly shall not stand in the judgment, nor sinners in the congregation of the righteous. For the Lord knoweth the way of the righteous, but the way of the ungodly shall perish. There's a lot packed in these few short verses, just like Psalm 101. David put a lot in here. Notice how he just, once again, the godly people that are walking today are making deliberate choices on what they're going to do with God and his law. And notice the end results. Notice the fruit. Verse 3, he shall be like a tree planted by the rivers of water. There is going to be a marked difference in the man that is committed to serving the Lord. There is a marked difference. You will be able to tell what he is. And in verse 4, you also be able to tell what the ungodly are like. They are going to be driven by the wind. They are very unstable people. Anything goes, anything is allowed, there's no commitment there, and they shall not stand in the judgment. We just come through learning that life is a life of conflict when we choose Christ. And as we look at this subject of I will set no wicked thing before my eyes, this is a decision and a commitment that we make. It's perhaps a secondary commitment. When we commit to Christ, we are making this secondary commitment as well, that we will choose to set no wicked thing before our eyes. It is a way of life, and it will not just happen. If we expect to get through life without having to make deliberate choices with our eyes, we are only fooling ourselves. I have four areas this morning, and I'd like to turn back to Psalm 101, because most of what I have to look at is pulled out of Psalm 101. But I have four areas I want to look at this morning. They're not all-inclusive. I've not covered everything, but there are four things that I personally need to work on. And as a congregation, perhaps we need to work on them as well. But I want to pull four areas out of this chapter that we need to look at. The first one is simply the people we associate with. As we read through this chapter, notice all the people that David pretty much just cuts out of his life. And I didn't study into this, but I wonder if he was not a king at this time when he wrote that. And so perhaps he's in a different position than you and I. He was in a different era of time. He was in the time of the law. He was not in the time of the church. We do not today just simply cut and kill people out of our land that do not live right. But I believe we can take a spiritual example from this morning. David was very careful at the time of this psalm who he chose for his friends and his close associates. And today, if we're not going to set anything wicked before our eyes, we need to choose our friends carefully. And as sad as it may seem, we need to choose our friends carefully in the church as well, I believe, because there are those that do not always live the way they ought to. Maybe not so much in smaller congregations, but in larger congregations, and they have a negative impact on our spiritual life. And those kind of people need to be not necessarily cut off, because we are here to redeem people, but we need to choose our friends wisely. And that is why also I like verse 6. And I want to say this about our congregation. We have a huge blessing here that we can work on. There's not very many people here my age. And I was talking to a man in the community, and he brought this to my attention. I had known it before quite some time, because I'd also experienced it in another congregation. But when you have a small congregation like this, it does something with us. It forces me to relate to people that are younger than me and older. It forces me to relate to the youth and also to the older among us. I remember being in a larger congregation where I could just always be with the people my age group. And it tended to make life a little more exciting because they did the things I wanted to do. But as this man went on to say, he said there's an emptiness about it, because he feels like people, when they only associate with their age group, do not really develop, especially spiritually. Because there is a huge blessing that we have this morning when we can relate to the older ones among us, those that have had years of experience, and they realize what the conflict is about, and they've had experience. And it's a blessing when those older people can relate to the younger ones. It does something to a congregation. It helps us choose our friends wisely. And of course, first and foremost, in the people we associate with, we must associate with Jesus Christ, our supreme example. That is all part of this choosing to set no wicked thing before our eyes. no evil before our eyes. We also be required ourselves at times to stand up for what is right, and it'll feel like we are all alone. Perhaps maybe the children among us face this a little more often, but I think we as adults face it, and maybe perhaps we don't realize it quite so often. But we need to stand up for what is right at times. We need to be the faithful ones. We cannot always depend on those around us to be the faithful ones. There are times you and I need to stand up and choose, and it's not just sometimes, it's all the time. We need to choose what is right, even when there's a lot of people, and sometimes close friends are not choosing what is right. But to just slide along with the crowd is not choosing to set no evil before your eyes. Sometimes we need to choose to stand up for what's right. 1 Corinthians 15:33, be not deceived. Evil communications corrupt good manners. The second area I want to bring out in setting no evil before our eyes is where we go. There are many places that we could go that are not wrong in itself. But yet perhaps it's the influence, the people that are there, that draw us away. Or maybe it's just simply the things that are sold at that place of business. And I want us to remember, through this all, we cannot isolate ourselves from all people. Jesus did place us in this world to serve the people around us. But we need to choose our associates and those that we depend on for advice carefully. One of the places that I thought about, of things that maybe we ought to choose not to go to because of the evil that's there, I'm just going to use this for an example, and that is the beach. I know I have been there already, but I just question whether we ought to be taking our families there or going there ourselves. It is a part of God's beautiful creation, and I think He wants us to enjoy it, but can we find a time to go when it's not very busy, or find a place that is empty? We all know what is at the beach. I don't need to go into detail there. Is it worth our salvation to see what we can get by with, and what effect does it have on our children? I'm not saying that the beach is a wrong place to go to, but is it a place that God's people need to be at and place ourselves in the temptations and all the immodesty that is there? We can choose to go another day, or perhaps not at all. If you never see the beach in your lifetime, is it going to affect whether you get to heaven or not? There are different places like that, and I think about for myself, there's different restaurants that have the television screen there, and not necessarily everything that comes across the television is evil, but I tend to get, especially when the games are on, I tend to get very focused on the games, and I ignore the people that are around me. Because I enjoy watching the sports. I enjoy watching games. But does it have a spiritual upbuilding in my life? And am I ignoring the people that I'm supposed to be associating with? Do I need to even place myself at those places? Am I choosing to go there for what reason? There's probably other places you can think of. Places that you probably are not morally wrong to go to, but yet we choose to go there for what reason? Because of the evil there, we want to just play with it a little bit, or because we don't have any other choice but to do business there? If we can avoid the evil in those places, why wouldn't we? Why would we not choose? Why would we not make that commitment to stay away? Thirdly is what we read. Some of you don't have this issue at all. You don't enjoy reading, and And maybe you should count your blessings, because there's... I love to read, and I don't ever get enough time to read, and I don't ever have enough books in my hands to read. And some people have went on with technology, and they use e-books or audiobooks, and that's fine. But you still need to choose what evil you set before yourself, if you're going to choose evil or not. But I believe reading is good for people. That doesn't mean, I think, if you're not a reader, that you should force yourself to read. You can find God's blessings other ways. But if you're here this morning and love to read, make sure you take time to read. But also make sure that you read good books, wholesome books for us, for ourselves. And here's where I want to start bringing the fathers in more and more into focus. It is your responsibility to know what your children are reading and what is in your house. God has given you the responsibility, and I the responsibility, to spiritually nurture our children. I can quickly allow in my own life a book to take over my attention span. You can come into the room, and if it's a good book, there's a good chance I won't even know that you were there and when you left. I can become very wrapped up. But what is in your library? What is the balance of fiction stories and true stories? Is there a lot of romance books in your library this morning? A lot of romance books portray a false reality to life. And if children are allowed to feed on these, they grow up and life becomes very difficult for them, because they think that what's in the book is what is reality and life is not what's in the book. Western novels, many of them have a thrill to them. They are very captivating to read. But they're not much different than romance novels. The violence in these books, for one, is not good for the Christian. And somehow the good guy always comes out on top in these books, and that's not how life is. Wasn't Jesus the good guy at the crucifixion? Yes, he come out in victory over death and sin. But in life, I guess the Christian is the good guy, and he does always come out on top, because when he's dead, he's in heaven. But so often in life, the difficulties that we face, when we come through them, these books just do not portray the way life really is. And if we allow our children and ourselves to feed on them, it makes it difficult for us to balance life out. I want to say this part carefully, and I believe our reading needs to be very balanced. There's those books out there that just don't need to be read. They're just evil. And I also know that there's people that believe that all fiction books are just bad and wrong. You only ought to read books that are true stories. I don't necessarily agree with that. But that is where I think the balance needs to come in. I have read a number of fiction stories written by Mennonite Christian authors. I can say it that way, actually. Just putting Mennonite on there doesn't really necessarily make it right. But they were very good books. They had very good endings, and I would say they were very close to reality. And perhaps some of the happenings inside the books were actually real-to-life happenings for some people. But I believe a lot of our reading material ought to have the true story basis to it. That way life is reality in the book and in our minds. But I'm not saying that we have to get rid of all fiction books. But there again, we need to choose. If there's a lot of evil, a lot of violence, a lot of sin that is glorified in the book, and we choose to read it and to feed on it, and we allow our children to read it and our friends to read it, we are really setting evil before our eyes and accepting it. Fourth area I want to look at is technology. But it goes way beyond the television screen. All of us have devices, whether it's a laptop, a tablet, anything, any electronic device, falls under this category of what are you going to choose to set before you? The device itself is not morally wrong. The television set is not a morally wrong device. I believe that the television set is right in the category of technology and devices that we have. It's just simply another way, another piece of technology. It fits right in there with our smartphones and our laptops and everything else right now. Because all those devices that can connect to the internet have a lot more evil on them than what the TV has on, I would say at this point. You can get unlimited TV on your smartphone if you want to, and unlimited videos and all that. And so it comes down to, what are you going to choose to watch on there? What are you going to choose to look at on your device? Whether it's your flat screen TV or whether it's your laptop or your smartphone. There's evil there to access, and there's evil all around us in these things. And one could probably spend a whole morning just talking about setting no evil before your eyes with technology, but I decided not to. I'm just going to touch on it here at the end of in a little bit. But as we think of the gospel of Jesus Christ, it is a simple gospel. It is humanity that complicates it. We remember the commitments David made in these two chapters, and we need to take it on ourselves. I will set no evil before my eyes. I will choose my friends wisely. It's really pretty simple, because God has already decided what is good and evil. It is us humans that try to excuse what really evil is and what good is. But God has already drawn that line. And if we follow God's line, it simplifies so many things. Our forefathers said the TV is something that we set before our eyes that is evil, and we can't accept it. And I think about the internet. Where was our generation at? There's probably more evil on the internet than what is on TV. What are we doing about it? Fathers, this is your responsibility. This is our responsibility this morning. Of what are we doing with this technology? What personal choices have you made this morning? What commitments have you made to limit your access to this evil that is at our fingertips? It's your choices that limits or safeguards your family. Is the browser on your phone wide open for anybody to just spend all the time they want on it? You may tell yourself, I may handle it. I can handle it. I can say no. But what about your children? What about your nephews, your nieces that come in? And I heard a brother say this one time, it takes me 5 minutes to get around on the internet, and my child can pick up that phone and be into evil in 10 seconds. And I think that's true. They can find that so quickly. God has placed the innocence of your children in your hands. And I bring up a question this morning as I was studying it. This came to me, and it was a very thought-provoking question to me. It kind of hit me. I guess it was the Spirit of God that brought it to me. But I ask, is there any difference between a father that is impure with his children or a father that is not proactive in safeguarding the purity of his children in this area? If you're going to be careless with this, are you any different than the man that is impure with his children? You are responsible this morning, fathers, to block and to cut out these evils for your children. YouTube is another place that is just full of evil. There's many good things to watch on YouTube, if you want to say it that way. But there's also probably, take that times 10 or 100, amount of evil on YouTube. And is that just a wide open place for your children to go to or yourself? In the area of technology, this is a very challenging time for us to live in. In the past, churches could just place safeguards and standards in the place for things and life went on. But there's two things that I see about our generation, my generation that I'm living in. And the first thing is standards are being thrown out, challenged or thrown out. We don't need them. We can live without standards. They're not important to us. And two, technology is changing so fast, it's hard to keep up. It's hard to know where to draw the line and when to say no. And perhaps it's just our humanity that's making it difficult for us to do that. In this last weekend, we heard about the rise of individualism. I think it has always been a part of humanity, but I think with the rise of technology and what technology has brought us, that I think individualism has almost grown and has become a bigger issue in our life. We could look at social media as well under this umbrella of technology. And here again, this is an effect that we're still seeing spiral downward and downward. Youth just don't get caught up in social media. I believe the devil has designed social media. He is the one behind it. It's all part of his agenda to be. Social media is known to be a self-driving, self-promoting way of life. And people that get caught up in it, it just comes out in their lives. And are we going to choose to set this kind of lifestyle before us? Or are we going to make the commitment to choose something different? You look at the online groups and communities, and there's a false sense of security there that goes with it. It's almost impossible to know the real people behind these groups. You can have a group of 300 people on these online groups, and you don't know the personal lives of them. They could be one of these evil men that David was talking about here in Psalms, but on this online group, they're putting on this nice, good front. And later on, they may turn against you for something that you have said. Many people are driven by the likes and the dislikes. Suicide rates are up simply because of all the dislikes they get on their online communities. Is that really what we want to commit to? Is that really what we want to be driven by? Is that really what we want to set before ourselves and our children? I guess what really brought me to this subject, I was talking to a brother from another church setting, and they're trying to walk their way through the technology thing especially. And he was bemoaning the fact that it is so difficult to know where to draw the line. You have the conservatives and the liberals. The conservatives want to cut everything out, and the liberals want to accept everything, and you got everybody in between there that you have to make happy. And after we talked a while, we both came to the conclusion, or this theme verse came up after a while, and we both came to the conclusion that the real problem we're facing today is lack of commitment. People want to live the way they want to live. They want to make their own rules. They want to live the way they want to live. And they are unwilling to commit themselves, first of all, to God and a church, because they want to be free to live how they want to live. What are we going to choose this morning? What are we going to commit to this morning? As David wrote in these two Psalms, he had nothing but commitment to God. He was going to choose God the whole way through. And that meant cutting certain people out and certain things out. Are you and I willing to take the stand this morning? If we take a half-hearted approach in our lives this morning, not just in technology, but in the places we go, the books we read, the people we associate with, if we take a half-hearted approach to that and only prepare halfway, are we any different than that parable that Jesus used of the 10 wise and foolish virgins? Are we any different than the 5 foolish ones? They looked right, they talked right, they acted right, but they failed to prepare. They were committed to going. They made it to the door, but they failed in their commitment to prepare. Are we any different when we just walk through life and we just make no commitments for ourselves, commitments to God? If we're unwilling to commit this morning, I don't think we're going to make it to heaven either. And the sad part is probably a lot of our children will not be there either. Let us be faithful today. Let's rise to the challenge. Let's make commitments. Let's choose to set no evil before our eyes. Let's kneel for prayer.